Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayer.
And I'm Bob Rietal. In this episode, we have a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting.
All right, this is a special roundtable discussion Bob and I are going to have on some breaking news. We'll find out just how much it breaks in a couple of months. And that is the announcement that DC Comics is going to relaunch all of their DC Universe titles with new number ones in September. Now, technically, I guess one of them comes out that last day of August, the 31st, with that Justice League. But to me, this is a huge announcement. And I think is definitely got the potential of being kind of a game changer as to what direction stuff obviously we'll know in months to come. But, I mean, I don't know about you, Bob, but do you agree this is just huge news?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, there's been rumors for this for several weeks now since Bleeding Cool noticed that DC was, you know, on their August solicits, which it's interesting to point out that as you listen to this, because we're recording this special, the news just hit May 31st. We're recording it May 31st, and this episode's going to go up on June 1st, the next day. I think that's the first time we've ever done that. And, you know,
actually,
they just
we've done one or two that have had that kind of turnaround, but not many.
Right, but not on breaking news.
Not on breaking news. That is correct.
And, you know, so this news is hot off the presses. But they have been rumored because in the August solicits, which are just hitting the previews for August, is just hitting the stands June 1st, the day that this episode is released. Bleeding Cool noticed on the online solicit several weeks ago that almost every DC title was having the end of a story arc, and there were double shipments of several books to squeeze in an extra issue to get to the end of a story arc. So they were surmising that, well, you know, everything's kind of ending, and it's also when Flashpoint number 5 is coming out. And then they announced that, you know, August 31st, the only book that was going to be coming out was Flashpoint number 5. So there was rumors that no one would confirm about a line-wide reboot. And in fact, I was at the Phoenix Comic Con just this last weekend, and you know, we had some panels there. It wasn't like DC wasn't officially at the show. You know, they didn't have a DC booth or anything. But, you know, we had Paul Cornell and Ethan Van Sciver and, you know, some other DC people there. And, you know, when people asked them about, you know, the reboot, you know, it was all no comment and non-disclosure agreement this and, you know, can't say that. And then this actually hit today. I think the first place it hit was in USA Today.
And that was the first I saw of it, yeah.
And then after that, it just kind of rippled across all the comics news sites, and the forums are all lit up talking about it. Let me read the letter from Bob Wayne to the retailers.
Okay, because I haven't seen that once. Yeah, let's see that.
So Bob Wayne writes, to our comics retail partners, in the time I've worked at DC Comics, I've witnessed any number of industry-defining moments, but today I bring to you what is perhaps the biggest news to date. Many of you have heard rumors that DC Comics has been working on a big publishing initiative for later this year. This is indeed a historic time for us, as come this September, we are relaunching the entire DC Universe line of comic books with all new first issues, 52 of them to be exact. In addition to the new number ones, we will In addition, the new number ones will introduce readers to a more modern, diverse DC universe with some character variations in appearance, origin, and age. All stories will be grounded in each character's legend, but will relate to real-world situations, interactions, tragedy, and triumph. The epic event will kick off on Wednesday, August 31st, with the debut of a brand new Justice League number one, which pairs Jeff Johns and Jim Lee together for the first time. Yes, this is the same week as Flashpoint number 5. We think our current fans will be excited by this evolution and that will make jumping into the story extremely accessible to first-time readers, giving them a chance to discover DC's characters and stories. We are positioning ourselves to tell the most innovative stories with our characters to allow fans to see them from a new angle. We have taken great care in maintaining continuity where most important, but fans will see a new approach to our storytelling. Some of the characters will have new origins, while others will undergo minor changes. Our characters are always being updated. However, this is the first time all of our characters will be presented in a new way all at once. Dan DiDio, Bob Harris, and Eddie Braganza have all been working diligently to pull together some of the best creative teams in the industry. Over 50 new costumes will debut in September, many updated and designed by artist Jim Lee, ensuring that the updated images appeal to the current generation of readers. The publication of Justice League No. 1 will also launch digital day and date for all ongoing superhero comic book titles, an industry first. On Wednesday, June 1st, this initiative is expected to be announced in a nationwide feature article, and we're hopeful the news will be picked up by media outlets around the world. Throughout the month, we'll reveal more details of our plans with articles in both mainstream and comics press, and on June 13th, the Diamond Catalog solicitations for all of the September titles will be released, followed by the June 29th streak date of the print version of previews. DC will support this initiative with an innovative mix of publicity, promotional efforts, and retailer incentives designed to maximize your opportunity to increase your DC sales. We will discuss additional details of these incentives when we get closer to solicitation later in June. We'll be updating you more through email as September nears, but today, I hope you share our enthusiasm for this historic news. Sincerely, Bob Wayne, Senior Vice President, Sales, DC Entertainment. Now, it's like, wow. You know, well, where do we start?
Because really,
digital is the big one.
Well, I was going to say, there are two big things right there. One, they're retooling, relaunching, revamping their entire superhero lineup. I mean, I'm interpreting this as being the entire DC universe proper, you know, from every end of the spectrum or whatever. Obviously, things like the Vertigo, the Johnny DC, other, you know, stuff like that probably isn't going to get touched. But to take the bread and butter, you know, lineup of titles and wholesale revamp it, huge. And then, like you said, the digital side of it, the day and date release, that's also huge. And tying those together at the same time was a brilliant move. Because now, you know, it allows people to get in really at the ground floor of the new DC universe.
Right, and they're going to be visually distinctive, too, because they're updating costumes, you know, some minor, some others. In the USA Today article, you kind of see, I mean, they're obviously recognizable as the same characters. I don't want to trivialize this, but, you know, it's like, you know how in Marvel in the 90s, everyone had a leather jacket. I'm looking at the picture here, and like Aquaman, Superman, and Green Lantern all kind of have a collar with a V-neck that kind of goes up. And it's like they all look, you know, they're slightly different. It looks like the Superman symbol has been retooled a little bit. Aquaman's costume's, you know, slightly updated. But, you know, there's just a slight revamping, but they all look, and you know, different artists draw characters different all the time, but you know, kind of doing an across the board kind of tweak to a lot of people's a lot of the characters' costumes and origins and backstory, and doing, you know, some other stuff like that, you know, it's they're really going to be shaking stuff up, you know.
Well, and again, they've done that sort of thing once before, and that was about 5 years ago, back in May 2006, when they did the 1 year later initiative. And that was one not quite in as big as this. I mean, it touched all the main superhero titles. They jumped it forward a year, but they kept the numbering. Some cases, they kept most of the team. Other cases, they changed up the team members. They changed up the creative team. It was a pretty big shakeup. And what happened? was that first month, DC got like a million more units in sales than they had the previous month, had the largest difference between their share and Marvel's share, you know, in their favor or whatever. So they did the best in terms of their percentage of the top 300 unit sales that they've done during the entire, you know, Final Order era. But, you know, the shiny new wore off kind of quick. And, of course, you can't expect everyone who tries everything to stick with it all. That's just not going to happen. But what I think this means is, you know, sure, DC's kind of sacrificing some sales by only having two of their titles, superhero titles, out on that August 31st. But I think they're more than going to make up for it in September with all of these first issues. Now, how those second issues do, another story entirely. I think that's really going to depend on, I mean, like with this Justice League number one, Jeff Johns, Jim Lee, man, that's a great creative team. The only potential downside to that is, can Jim Lee get the book out on time? Now, presumably they've been working on it long enough, that won't be a problem, but that's top flight talent. That should do really well. I mean, to me, that in and of itself could be the top-ranked book, you know, in August, maybe Flashpoint 5, who knows? You know, it's at least in the running. You know, are they going to be able to have that kind of top-caliber talent on the other 51 titles that they're doing? I mean, maybe they can, maybe they can't. I don't know. But I'm certainly curious to find out. Now, I've got mixed feelings about the new origins, new backstory, whole new take on everything, modernizing it and stuff like that, because obviously these new number ones are a jumping on point, but what that means is as of today, as we're recording this, May 31st, and certainly as of tomorrow, June 1st, everything coming out in August is almost by definition a jumping off point for people. Anyone looking to get off some of these titles have just been given a great excuse.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the new number ones are a jumping on point, and they're also a huge possible jumping off point for existing people also. And that's the thing. You know, people are going to be looking at that. It's almost like you throw everything up in the air, and it's like, okay, I was getting these books before. What am I going to get now? And you know, there's going to be new, you know, Bob Wayne's letter said they're, you know, looking at, you know, these new creative teams. I saw some news on the internet, a whole bunch of news. They're talking about a lot of the different series that are coming out. You know, they're like Brian Clevenger from Atomic Robo was supposed to be doing a Firestorm series. And it's like he's no longer doing that Firestorm series. They got somebody else doing it, you know, before he even, you know, had a chance to do it. Somebody else is doing it. You know, so they're shaking a lot of stuff up.
Well,
who's going to try out what is the real question.
Well, and one of the things I did before we started recording this evening is I looked at those sales you know, the aggregate sales for DC, you know, back in, what was that I said? It was May 2006. And compared those with how April 2011 did. And man, there was a big difference. DC did over 3.4 million units for the top 300 in aggregate in May 2006, compared to a little over 1.7 million units in April 2011. So about half. And they've had a couple of months like January, what was under, you know, 1.5 million units for their total sales in the top 300. So I can understand why they're making this huge gamble, and I do think it is a huge gamble by mixing everything up and essentially restarting their bread and butter product line. You know, I think there's going to be a contingent of established readers who are going to look at this and say, gee, I don't know. You know, when I had looked at that USA Today article online earlier, there was one comment on it, and it was essentially somebody saying that this may be what causes him to leave comics. Kind of the, oh, they're rebooting it yet again kind of thing. Which I think is overstating it a little, but not by a whole lot. So it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out. I think in the print arena, It's definitely risky in terms of the online stuff. Again, I go back to it's a really brilliant move to be, you know, relaunching their entire universe with new number ones and doing the day and date release digitally. I think that really puts DC ahead of the curve on the digital side of distribution, whereas typically they have not been.
Yeah, well, you know, something that just occurred to me, it's going to be a real easy way for a while to tell which books have had delays. Because, you know, it's like 6 months, you know, after that, every book should be at number six. So if one book's at number three, it had some delays.
That brings up a couple of other points. I mean, you had mentioned that, you know, Bleeding Cool had deduced that this might happen because all the stories were ending kind of all at once. Well, if DC is smart, they're taking a look at this editorially and rethinking how they do stuff, getting back into that never-ending battle mindset that, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, comics, more I think the 80s, used to be in, where, you know, something happened in a given issue of a Batman or Superman title, they would fight so-and-so, but there'd be some subplot that spilled into the next issue where they fought somebody else, it would spill into the next issue, and it just kind of, there were enough narrative threads between the plots and subplots to pull you from issue to issue to issue to issue. Whereas now, everything is by and large six-issue arcs. So are we going to hit the point where at issue seven of everything, the majority of these titles are starting their second arc?
Well, the other part is, you know, are they going to continue the musical chair creative teams? Which I think has been another detriment to long-term readership. You know, because people like a team, they're reading it, and then when that team leaves after six issues or 12 issues, you know, a large segment of the readers leave and maybe some others come on. But, you know, can we get some longer runs out of this, and not, especially if everything is synced up at the same number, you know, if you start having a huge amount of turnover, you know, every 6 months, you know, at the same month, you know, that's going to be disastrous too.
Well, I think it's going to really show us if DC's kind of looking at the long game on this or not, because you got to have ways to rotate the creators just so they can stay fresh and stuff. But you're right, if they do it after every story arc, every other story arc, it's a musical chairs game and nobody wins. And I hope they're looking at the way they're telling the stories in a per-issue basis and really kind of not only putting top-flight talent on this, but giving them top-flight coaching editorially. Hey, make sure you've introduced every character this issue. Make sure there's some payoff in this issue. Make sure that the issue in and of itself justifies having read just that issue. Because if DC's editorial can really step up to the plate on that, you know, they've got a fairly good bench of creators these days that they could pull onto these titles. This could be just a win-win all the way around. But
they have a lot of opportunity here.
Yes, they do. Right. And opportunity is a dangerous risk, or I forget what the Chinese translation or whatever basically is.
Yeah, so like, may you be cursed to live in interesting times, something like that.
Something
right?
like that, yeah. But if I'm trying to think where I was going with this, but it's one of those things that if they don't use this as a chance to kind of retool editorially and keep people engaged and whatnot, it's one of those that I don't want to see them repeat the same mistakes that they've either made in the past or that other publishers have made. They could get to the point a couple of years from now where the ultimate line is now, of, okay, we've built up enough history, it's inaccessible again. You know, this whole reboot, and that's where I was going, this whole reboot not only has the wonderful opportunity presenting itself, but also I think there's that backlash that some people are going to have of, this is a really bad thing because, oh, they're jumping off points, they're, you know, throwing away everything they've been building up, you know, they have no faith in their stuff. I mean, there's a negative spin that could be put on this. And it's going to be very interesting over the next couple of weeks, couple of months, between now and when this comes out, to see what nature that buzz takes. Because this sort of start everything with a new number one, has been something that a number of fans have suggested over the years at various key points in the DC lineup. this would have been a brilliant move for them to have done right after Crisis on Infinite Earths. It might have worked after Zero Hour. Probably would have worked after Infinite Crisis. Coming out of Flashpoint, though, that going in has, you know, very mixed buzz, I think, makes this seem like a really kind of a weak jumping off point. I mean, the only thing I know right now about this new DC universe, other than it's going to have a Justice League title, is that the universe I'm going to be reading come September is not like the one I've been reading in the past. We've just been told they're going to have new origins, new costumes, be tweaked, sometimes majorly, sometimes minorly. It's also not going to be like the Flashpoint universe. I mean, I can't imagine they're going to keep Thomas Wayne as Batman, and obviously they're going to have a Superman and some stuff like that that they don't have right now in the Flashpoint universe. So it's one of those where I think while there's a wonderful opportunity here for sales, both for DC, for readers, for retailers, I mean, the whole thing, it's also going to be a very interesting end of year in that respect. Retailers are going to have to be gauging 52 new number ones. How do they think those are going to do? I mean, you were very overwhelmed just with the 20 Flashpoint number ones they offered.
Well, I mean, I was overwhelmed with 20 Flashpoint books on top of, you know, 40 or 50 regular DC books. I mean, this is all of the regular DC books are ending and they're being replaced by a similar number of number ones. So, you know, it to me, it's a little different. It's to give me choice. And then that I know that a lot of people, I mean, let's say most people are not getting 52 DC comic books. You know, most people are not getting anywhere even close to 52 DC comic books. So, you know, I think the 52 DC comic books is going to be somewhat overwhelming to them. But on the other hand, you know, I'm looking forward to June 13th when we see the solicits and we start seeing who these creative teams are. Now, the other thing that was somewhat disturbing to me on the Flashpoint titles, you know, was there were so many creators that I was just completely unfamiliar with.
Yeah,
on there,
that
you
was
know,
a big
if,
mistake.
If they relaunch 52 number ones, and it's like a really strong lineup of top-notch talent. You know, they're people that they've been surreptitiously behind the scenes, you know, pirating a lot of the stars of the indie community like Marvel does, and, you know, make a big splash and get these guys out there. You know, maybe this could be a big thing for them.
Well, I think not only is it going to be interesting to see who they put on the books and stuff, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they market these. I think this is a make-or-break opportunity for Bob Wayne and his portion of the DC behind-the-scenes people. Because they could take a title with maybe a not-top-flight creative team, but pitch it effectively, have us have confidence in those creators, even though they may not have a long track record, and still do pretty well. But if with 52, you know, or 51 actually in September, you know, books being all new number ones marketed at once, I mean, they can't give the full launch, you know, push to all of them. So it's going to be interesting to see what gets the interviews, what gets the full page in the previews, what gets the postage stamp size and the paragraph blurb or whatever. You know, and I really think that's where this needs to stand apart from Flashpoint, because the Flashpoint solicits have been haiku-like in nature. I mean, I think the longest one, once you get rid of the flash fact part of it, was 11 words. That's just not much to go on. They need to do a hell of a lot better when they launch these new number ones.
I'm thinking that, you know, the amount of information that's already coming out about this is way more than came out about Flashpoint. So maybe they actually learned something from that.
I hope they learned something from that. I hope they learned something from 1 year later. Because remember how much we liked what was going on with the Up, Up, and Away storyline in the Superman titles?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great 8 issues, resetting Clark Kent, getting him back to action, wonderful art, brilliant story. after which they went complete left turn, did a totally different direction for a little bit. Then they went another left turn, did another direction. And it comes down to, are they going to switch arcs, switch directions? Or do they have a plan? And if DC has a plan at this point, the people who are going to be behind that are going to be Geoff Johns, Dan Didio, and Jim Lee, among others. You know, those are going to be the ones kind of championing it. And, you know, I've got a lot of faith in Geoff Johns. I think he's done some great stuff. I think Jim Lee, in charge of the redoing of the costumes, brilliant choice. He's a great artist. Didio, I think, as a co-publisher at DC and editorially, has done some really great stuff. I think he's got the passion and the interest and kind of the business sense for comics. A little less confident on his writing. Not really enjoying what he's doing on Outsiders. But, you know, again, I loved what he did on Metal Men. So it comes down to, you could take almost any creator DC has right now, and if you can find the right property for them, conceivably all 52 of these could knock it out of the park. Now, realistically, not going to happen, but, you know, I'd love to see that happen. I'm a huge, huge DC fan.
Yeah, but different people are going to like different things, and I think that's what's going to be good. You know, if people will at least flip through these things, and you know what? A couple of smart things that DC could do is, like they did with the early issues of 52, and I think Countdown, is make the number ones partially returnable for the comic shops.
I would do that more for the 2, 3, and 4 than the number ones, but I see your point.
But I mean, do it for 1 through 4 or something, where it's going to remove the barrier for the comic shops to put these in front of their customers. You want the customers to be able to pick these things up, flip through them, give them a look, and be able to make a decision.
Yeah, this is where an overship program would be a smart move. Because if it's not on the shelf, the reader can't buy it. It's that simple. In print, day and date, digital, whole nother thing entirely.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing is, you know, day and date digital, heck, the smartest thing that they could do there is, on whatever site, you know, without making you need to have some kind of reader for it, is having, you know, 8-page free downloadable previews of every single one of those number one issues. And then actually make a point of, you know, having everyone write them so that those 8 pages have like a really compelling hook to make you want to see pages 13 through 20, or, you know, 9 yeah. through 20, rather. You know, it's just that is going to be something that they could and should do.
Frankly, this is one of those things where, with the day and date digital, I think they should be, you know, for people who are buying both the print and want the digital, they should essentially package in the digital almost for free. The 99 cents is not a low enough price point. But if I could be getting not only the 52 new number ones, but for maybe a quarter more per, you know, get a digital copy, that might be enough for me to go out and get a tablet device so I could go, you know, read these at work or whatever, or show them to other people. And it has the potential of taking hardcore fans of, and for DC, I don't know that you could get too much harder core than me for the DC Universe line, at least, less so obviously for Vertigo and whatnot, but still, and turn them into the raving fans that are selling other people on the products. You know, I think there's an opportunity to be had here if, you know, the Luddite that I am who wants that Dead Tree edition could both get that print and, without paying, you know, significantly more or whatever, get a digital one that I could be showing off to people at work who are also sitting there with an iPad or a Google tablet or whatever.
Right.
And, ooh,
right.
That looks cool. Let me get that.
Right.
You know, the whole possibility of people being able, with the push of a button or, you know, a click on the screen or whatever on their devices, you know, getting the entire lineup of the new DC Universe, I mean, that opens up a huge audience. And I wish there was some way I could get that kind of sales information, but realistically, there's not.
Well, here's, you know, the whole digital thing's an interesting topic. Now I'm going to bring us down a rabbit hole here with the... Sure. Controversial statement. I mean, I do think that the way that Marvel and DC are mining the direct market right now, it's on a runaway train towards the end of a cliff, you know, sometime in the next 5 years or so if something doesn't happen to arrest that that headlong rush towards oblivion. And I think digital is one of those ways, because the problem that I perceive is the people who go to comic shops are locked into, and you know, they're locked into Marvel mostly and DC, and some of them like other stuff, but you know, you're not going to be growing the audience by continually mining this existing and ever shrinking group of people. You need to find new people. And those new people, it's extremely difficult to try to find those people and get them to come to the few and far between, you know, relatively few and far between comic shops that actually exist in the world. So having digital comics, right, as someplace where people can access them easily, that's going to be important. Now, it's not the only thing, but it's an important factor to expanding the audience. The next piece of that is you look at the nature of entertainment. You know, when I go see a movie, you know, movies now are like $9 or $10 to see a movie. I don't expect to come away from the movie with something that I can put in a box. I don't come away from the movie expecting to resell my experience of watching the movie down the line for, you know, $100 or anything like that. I pay them $10, and what I get in return is 90 minutes or so of escapism. Now, it takes 10, 15 minutes to read a comic book. What they need to do is put that 10 to 15 minutes at a price point that is commensurate with what somebody pays to see a movie, you know, so a buck, buck and a half or something. I think that $3 for 10 minutes of entertainment is too much. And, you know, by keeping the price point at $3, that is going to severely impede their ability to capture new audience and new market share. It's like with music on iTunes. You know, when you make something 99 cents, a buck 29, a buck 49, you're much more likely for someone to make an impulse buy of it and say, yeah, it's only a dollar. You know, what the heck? You know, when something's $3, I don't know about everybody, but I think a little more about it. I don't just, oh, it's $3, what the heck, you know. But 99 cents, I'll just get. You know, so what I'll be very interested in is what the price point of this day and date digital is.
Yeah, well, it will definitely be interesting on that. But I think the 20 pages is something that it comes down to, you know, how much is in those 20 pages? I've read a couple of comics that took me like 3 minutes to get through only because I was slow turning the pages. There was nothing to slow me down in the story to absorb me and get me into it. I've had others where it took me like 20, 30 minutes to get through a comic. And now that's a lot rarer and stuff. But it comes down to, is that 10 minutes of entertainment the equivalent of a 10-minute short story, cartoon, live action, you know, whatever kind of a thing, beginning, middle, end, with some development and stuff like that? Or is it like the act between the commercial breaks of a TV show where you're getting the middle part of a story? And that's where I go back to, you know, yeah, obviously cheaper price point would certainly lower resistance to getting people in, but it comes down to editorial. You know, with that Justice League number one, am I going to come out of that first issue feeling like I know who's in the team, the direction, the tone, the style that book is going to take? Or is it just setting up the scene to where in a couple issues we actually get the team together and they go do something? You know, and neither is necessarily a right or a wrong answer to that, but the more closure and completeness and sense of satisfaction people get out of that single installment, be it digital, be it print, the better off they are. And I really think the 99-cent price point for digital, frankly, for me, is still too high. You know, I want to have something tangible, whatever, but that's just me in terms of comics and stuff. Now,
right, but I'm the same way. I mean, I want the physical comic. I'm more looking at someone who's not you or me and has no desire to have a physical copy ever, you know, and they just want the entertainment from it. You mm-hmm. know, they just want to be able to read it and then it's gone. And maybe they'll look at it on their device again, but that, you know, maybe they won't.
But that same 99-cent price point for 20 pages of comic that gives them, say, 15 minutes of entertainment is going to get compared to the 99 cents they would pay for Angry Birds or whatever on that same device that would give them, you know, untold hours of enjoyment. So I think there's still going to be that entertainment calculus going on. And, you know, obviously cheaper is better, but how can they do it, you know, and still make money because this is a business? I think, given the downward direction print sales are going, it makes sense for publishers, particularly DC and Marvel, to be trying to leverage those of us that are going into the comic shop every week to get us a little bit more into the digital stuff, using our knowledge of the history of the comics, etc., to help them sell both the digital and the print version of, hey, you like that, they've got a trade paperback down at, you know, so-and-so store or whatever. If they can position the dynamic, the social dynamic of that successfully, you know, they could be taking what, granted, is a shrinking customer base on the print side, but turning that into a sales base both on the digital and in the print stuff, and the whole thing could feed on itself, growing both sides of the equation. Now, I don't see anyone really trying to do that. Yeah, DC's going day and date. Yes, they've got a big thing they're going to be doing in USA Today about that on June 1st and stuff, so we obviously haven't seen that yet. But the question is this going to create a new digital comic reader, you know, group of people that's a sizable audience or not? I think it has the potential, but iPad's been out for a year. It's had that potential the entire time to varying degrees based on accessibility of the material. Certainly day and date helps. But I'm not really, you know, seeing in the circles I travel in, you know, people who've gone whole hog digitally into comics. Not saying it doesn't happen, I'm just saying I haven't seen it firsthand. I've seen a lot of people who have iPads say, you know, I'm into comics, show me the comics. But I can only think of one or two people who really say that they read the comics digitally on any sort of, you know, regular basis at all.
Well, you know, another thing that's actually kind of interesting about digital comics is, unless there's like some kind of sale on them or something, there's no particular incentive to buy. You know, let's say go with like the Disney model, which, you know, like once a certain thing is like they won't sell it anymore, and that's, you know, I guess it's demand generation and all, but, you know, there's no incentive to buy a whole bunch of comics in advance. You know, we get this huge box of, you know, 50 or 60 comics in a week. Well, if you're not going to read 50 comics this week, there's no reason for you to buy 50 comics, you know, so you can buy those comics whenever it is you've got time, you know, maybe the day before, if you're going to go on a trip or something, you could buy and download the things to read on the plane, or, you know, you're going to read them over the weekend. But unless there's some kind of impetus to get people to buy these every Wednesday, you know, people are not going to do it. And that's an interesting point too. You know, maybe subscriptions, you know, maybe what they can do is, if you just buy them randomly, they're $2.99 or something, but you can buy a 12-issue subscription for $12 or something like that, and you pay in advance, you know, and you get them as they come out, and they automatically download, and then they lock in that sale.
Well, I think it's definitely going to be very interesting, because it means if you were to analyze the sales trends on digital comics versus their equivalent print comic, you're going to see something very different. You're going to see in the print side it very upfront loaded, most of it selling during that first week, probably even the first 2 or 3 days it's on the rack. Whereas, as you're saying, there's no incentive to pre-buy the digital version until you're ready to read it. You know, aside from, gee, I'm not going to have connectivity because I'm on a train or whatever. You know, for the majority of people who are not on planes, you know, the majority of the time, they'll wait until they're ready to read it. Now, exactly. The question becomes, how do you get them ready to read it? How do you get them in the habit of every fourth, you know, Wednesday or whatever, there's a new issue of Justice League, there's a new Batman, there's a new Superman. How do you build that social community around them that this becomes something worth talking about and therefore something worth reading and knowing about? It comes down to social currency. Yep. Lost did very well because it was something that you could talk about, you could speculate about, you could discuss with coworkers at the water cooler, and therefore it was a social currency, you know, in that respect, whereas other shows that don't have that typically don't do as well.
Get more of an online community built that's accessible directly from the comic on the reader device, where you can be posting comments and stuff about it, you know, that might actually do that. Another thing...
But even with that, it still means you've got to go into that reader to do it.
Oh, sure, sure.
You need something outside of that to keep people going back into that realm.
Well, another thing that just occurred to me that would make digital comics a little more compelling for some people, I know, you know, going and carrying a physical comic book around with you to places. I mean, it's a little easier. I mean, I would read trade paperbacks on planes and stuff, but you know, the monthly comics are somewhat fragile, and you know, you don't want to get that physical copy messed up or you know, whatever. And also, there's the kind of social stigma when you pull out a comic. You know, people still look at you sometimes like you're some kind of a, you know, an idiot child of some sort. You know, whereas if you're just holding a Kindle or iPad type device, unless someone is like right in your face and like looking over your shoulder, they're not necessarily aware what it is you're reading. So it could actually increase the number of people who would not feel embarrassed to sit on a bus or, you know, sit on the bench at, you know, school or something and read a comic book because it's not physically holding the thing.
Well, I mean, the other thing is the weight ratio. My average DCBS shipment, I'm going to say, is easily 6 to 8 pounds minimum. You know, I'm getting 40 to 50 comics a week or whatnot. I'm not sure how much some of these iPad and Google tablet and those devices weigh, but they're pretty damn lightweight. And if I could have not only all of this week's, but all the stuff I got in the last couple of months or whatever on there, again, the convenience factor. So I really think DC is making a very smart move with how they're using this to go online. I just think they need to be thinking a little bit more outside the box on how to get people already into comics. In other words, how to how to leverage the two audiences. The potential digital readers and the existing print readers, using the print readers to spurn the digital ones to actually go and buy and get into the digital comics, you know, and therefore have a common ground for discussion. And I think the Diamond Digital program is a step in the right direction, but as I recall, it's still, you know, a 99-cent surcharge over the print version or something. I forget the exact details, which for me is too much to justify, given that I've got the print version. You know, at that point, all I'm wanting digitally is the convenience. They get that down to a negligible charge, you know, for me it'd be around a quarter, maybe more, maybe less, depends. Certainly I'd consider it. You know, and again, I know I'm not the target audience they're after digitally. However, if they don't work on converting people like us, who are hardcore print readers, over to digital, preferably before the print, you know, version of the industry kind of collapses. And, I mean, when we're seeing sales on DC Universe titles, you know, under 10,000 units, there's cause for concern and questioning whether it's a viable model anymore or not. So I think, again, reaching digitally is smart, but transitioning us over time, I think, is just a good move. And I don't see them doing that just yet. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how things go in September, particularly how they roll out the announcement of the titles, who the creative teams are. This is going to be, I think, a very telling couple of months for DC, both in terms of, obviously, business-wise, they're making some changes, taking some risks. I applaud that. But editorially, who have they picked? Who have they backed? And are these products, are these titles that are going to have an inherent buzz like a Geoff Johns, Jim Lee on Justice League with the main Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, the main players and stuff involved? Or is it going to be something that they've got to create a buzz around in the hopes of selling? And, you know, it's something, like I said, editorially it'll show us what they're made of these days. Marketing-wise, it'll certainly show us. And then when these books start coming out creatively, it'll show us, you know, is this stuff that's going to be a big splash in September, but then come January it could be, you know, I mean, that's really what I think is going to be interesting, September and January.
Well, that's the danger, right? It's the danger and it's the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and it's the danger at the same time, because they have made a huge splash today, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're going to be continuing to make this huge splash for the next, month or so, and all the way up through September. They're going to be getting a lot of attention, and rightly so, because they're doing some very innovative, very risky stuff. So all eyes are going to be on them. And they can, if they do a really, really, really good job on this, it could be just the shot in the arm that takes to invigorate them. But at the same time, if they screw it up, they're going to fall hard, you know. And I'm not wishing anything bad on them. I'm just making the observation that they now have the golden opportunity to make some stuff change.
Well, I think it's entirely probable. You know, if I had to put money on it, I would be willing to put some, not a whole lot, but some money, just because I'm not much of a gambler, but on DC having the lion's share of the breakdown of the top 300 in September. To me, that's almost a given. Regardless of what the 51 titles are, they're all number ones. People will try that out. I've got enough faith it'll do pretty well, just like 1 year later did. You know, come October? Don't know. November, don't know. December, Christmas, it'll be an okay month. But again, come that January, by that point, the new and the shiny has completely worn off. And they're having
People will have been able to see this stuff now, and they're not ordering blind.
Yep. Add to that the, oh crap, I've got to pay my holiday bills syndrome that usually makes January a pretty weak month. And that's going to be a very telling point. And we've seen a lot of titles, a lot of X-title number ones, you know, over at Marvel, drop by 40, 50, or 60% between the first and second issues. So October could be a very stressful month for DC.
Well, yeah, if they don't, like we were saying way at the beginning, do some kind of a returnable, you know, overship or something to allow the stores to have those books in front of the customers with no risk to themselves going out of business if people don't buy them.
DC
needs to take the risk. They cannot shunt that risk onto the comic shops.
And I totally agree with that. But to me, that lowers the stress of September, both for DC, for the readers, and certainly for the retailers. And if DC does not shoulder some of the risk on this and help the retailers out as much as they possibly can, instead of just, I mean, it would be horrible for them to say, here's 52 new number ones, all of your cycle sheets, all of your sales data for the last couple of years, well, I don't know if that's going to be the least bit applicable, but figure it out. That would be horrible. And if they could do something returnable or more information or something to mitigate that risk for the retailers, it's in their own best interest.
But even more information is not going to be that useful in practicality, because how much is a retailer going to be able to absorb when they get hit by a wave of information on 52 books?
The retailer doesn't need to absorb all that information. The reader community does. The retailers just need to listen to their customers.
Well, yeah, if their customers come in and tell them, as opposed to, you know, being the people who fly in and just pick stuff up off the rack, you know, on the, you know, when it
but
comes out.
But retailers have enough time to be grooming their customers accordingly. Yeah. You know, I think a lot of people are aware of previews, aware of pre-ordering, pull lists, how that benefits. This gives the retailers a couple of months to have that conversation, to let them know this is what we're planning on doing, not planning on doing, so if you want a copy, you got to let us know. You know, people are, particularly in this kind of economy, are realistic enough to know, hey, you know, yes, I'd like to sample some of the 52, but I don't know which one, so I want you to have a ton of copies of all of them. just isn't realistic and not in their long-term best interest if they want that retailer to stay afloat.
What I'm next going to be really interested in is how is Marvel going to react to this? We saw how they reacted to DC stealing their thunder before the New York Comic Con announcing the rollback to the $299 price point. They came out with a very disingenuous and misleading announcement that made it seem like they were doing the same thing and essentially didn't, and you know, kind of said, oh, just kidding, you misunderstood what we said. You know, what is Marvel going to, they're, I'm sure right now, as we record this, because the news just hit the internet like less than, like probably about 4 hours ago as we record this. Right now, the guys at Marvel are sitting in some conference room somewhere thinking how they are going to respond to this, what kind of spin they're going to put out, and what they're going to do to steal this thunder back from DC.
Well, I think there's that conversation going on at Marvel. I think Kirkman is having that conversation with people over at Image. If I were over at Marvel, what I would do to counter this is basically spin it as clearly DC is you know, flopped. They're having to relaunch everything. Nothing's working for them. Why do you think the next round's going to be any better? We're staying the course. We've been on top for really, and they have been on top for like 95 of the last 99 months. So I think Marvel's got a position that they could take and back up and spin it that way. Now, I think over at Image, it's a little bit different because they're plopping out about 52 new number ones a month, it seems like. But I think something is going to come out of Kirkman's corner of Image or somebody at Image, and I think it'll be Kirkman himself, probably. I expect it to be a mocking of this announcement in some way, shape, or form, and just to kind of not take it seriously, but to make a comment about it.
Well, I think Brevoort is likely to say some really, you know, asinine thing about it too, you know, because that's his way.
Yeah, but I think he's one of those where I think he makes unfortunate comments at times. I think he's killed his credibility, but I think he's also circling the heart of the matter at times. I mean, his whole recent comment about angry fans are good. No, fans who are talking about your product are good. If they're angry about it, that's not good. You know, and I think right now this is really going to tell us the temperament of people like Brevoort, like Kirkman, like Quesada, you know, as to how they react to this. It's also going to really tell us about the temperament of the average DC fan by seeing what the buzz of this is. There are a lot of people saying, oh, wow, they're rebooting again. Maybe I'll get off. Gee, I don't know that I need this. And that kind of angst or whatever, there are other people who are going to be excited about it.
I'm seeing all over Facebook, it is overwhelmingly negative on the DC communities, and they, as I've seen, they actually shut down comments in various places.
The irony is that may actually be in DC's favor.
Oh, sure. I'm just saying.
Because it lowers expectations for these new number ones and makes it easier for them to knock it out of the park.
Anytime there's change, there's going to be a wailing and gnashing of teeth. You can pretty much just guarantee that. And big change is just going to cause big wailing and gnashing of teeth. So I'm not too worried about it. The proof is going to be in the books. You know, how good are those books? And that's why, you know, like I said, I'm going to buy all of the number ones. You're going to buy all of the number ones, I'm sure.
Unless there's some that completely are obviously not going to be to my liking, yeah. If they
Captain
do,
Child Molester, perhaps, you're not going to get?
You know, he who rips them limb from limb, you know, man or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, you know, whatever they come up with, you'll be on board for. They are going to have a Dead Man series.
Yeah, it's not, even if they have like a gory
Adventure
cannibal
comics.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to do any gory cannibals in the superhero universe. You know,
I doubt it too. I'm just saying, if they did, that would be what it would take for me not to get
DC one. Version of the Crossed. You know,
yes.
It's like now the Crossed is in the DC universe.
Of course, that version would just be a guy who's really just upset. He's very cross.
But, you know, so we're going to get these books, and we'll talk about them on the show. I plan to talk about each and every one, talk about what I liked about it and didn't like about it. And, you know, I'm going to give each one of them a shake. But that said, I am not going to give 52 books a 4 to 6 issue trial run. They are going to grab me in the first issue or they are not.
So you're essentially saying all of them are getting the first issue tryout and that's it?
That is, I'm going to order the number one of every single one of them. And I am not going to necessarily order the number twos of every single one of them.
Okay.
I mean, I will probably order Justice League number two, you know, by Lee and Morrison. I will, you know, depending on who the team is and what the book is, I will order beyond number one. But something like there's an OMAC book they're putting out, you know. I'm not like the biggest OMAC fan in the world, but I'll give it an issue, you know. Depending on who the team is, I mean, if it's like some creators that I'm absolutely in love with, I'll give it more.
Well, you know, that brings up another interesting point, because I hadn't realized they were going to do an OMAC title. This is going to tell us not only who they think they're really, you know, good creators are, but also what they think their key properties are. Because the titles themselves, whether that new OMAC title has anything to do with the current, you know, Infinite Crisis, you know, Maxwell Lord type OMACs, or the original OMAC, or you know, something entirely different, is irrelevant. It tells me that they see value in that title, in that property, in that name. So I expect we're going to see certain names, you know, maybe a Hawk and Dove, other ones that they keep trying to put back out there, Suicide Squad.
Yeah, certain ones that I've seen, you know, because they don't have all of them, but there's going to be a Birds of Prey series, Teen Titans,
I'm thinking
Justice
more
Society, Wonder Woman. There's going to be a Green Lantern core title that's all the Rainbow cores.
But I'm thinking
we said a long time ago that that would be a good idea.
Yeah, but I'm thinking more of the titles that they keep trying to put out there and keep failing. You know, we're probably going to get more of those kinds of titles out of the 52 than the obvious ones of here, ones that have been successful for quite some time. I mean, Birds of Prey has been going on for 10 years over two titles. So that's not, to me, one of those constant, oh my god, they're relaunching it again titles.
Well, although, what they does saying, it is not going to be written by Gail Simone.
To me, that's not that big of a deal.
Well, depending on who does write it.
Yes, that's the bigger deal.
That's the thing. If Gail Simone was writing it, I would have been ordering number two. You know, it's like, because I love Gail Simone's writing.
But for all the people who said, oh, I'm getting off Power Girl, you know, because they're getting rid of Amanda Connor and Palmiotti and Gray, or you, who were the writers on that? But, you know, when that creative team flipped over, you look at that sales curve.
Judd Winnick took over after.
That's who took over, but who was on it before? Because people weren't saying, I'm not getting on it because Winnick's on it. They're saying, I'm getting off it because Amanda Connor and crew are getting off. And
yeah,
you look
Palmiotti
at the,
and Gray.
Palmiotti right. and Gray. But you look at the sales curve on that, there is zero evidence of that happening. So, yes, there are certain creators that, I mean, I'd love to see on certain books, but just because they're not on it doesn't mean the people who are going to be on it can't do an equally good job or better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'm just saying, I'm not going to gamble on that by pre-ordering a huge number of them. I will make the determination after I read the first issue on certain titles. And we'll see what those are when I see the solicits come June 13th.
Yeah.
You know, come June 13th, I'm going to put a whole bunch of number one DC books on my list, and some of them are going to have the parenthetical tryout written next to them. And well, that one I'm going to read number one before I decide to order any more.
And that's one of the things where I think DC did kind of jump the gun on this. They should have waited at least another week, possibly a week and a half, to make this announcement. Because by doing it the way they did, this information about the September titles, now granted, maybe it's going to be obvious in the previews that comes out on Wednesday, which is tomorrow for us, today if you listen when this first goes up, they're short-circuiting the buzz on the entire August solicitation cycle for them. And maybe that's intentional, maybe that's not, but I think, again, that kind of jumping of the gun was a very interesting decision. You know, I would have at least given that. Now, part of it is that previews came out late, too. That doesn't help.
Right.
But I would have at least given it a week or two to get some traction.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, we'll be talking about this quite a bit in the upcoming Mayo reports. We'll certainly try to figure out a way to you know, give all of these first issues some coverage on the podcast. We'll obviously do, you know, one a week or whatever in the weekly comic spotlight. We may try to come up with some other, you know, short-term series of episodes to cover the rest or whatever. We'll see what we can do on that, because again, I think this is a big decision by DC. I wish them the best in this. I hope it works out for them. But you know, I'm gonna be looking at how they market this, how they pick their titles, how they pick the creators on the titles, and you know, call it as I see it. If I think they're making mistakes, you know, like I think they did with, you know, undercutting the August solicitation cycle, I'm gonna mention that.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm excited because they've got a huge opportunity here. But at the same time, you know, it's an opportunity and it's a risk all rolled up into one. You know, I'm going to give, and this is more than most people are going to do, right? I'm going to give every one of those number ones a try, and it's up to that number one to, you know, sell me on whether I want to come back for the number two.
When you put on the forum and stuff, which ones you're ordering, any that you're already confident at that pass, you're going to get the second issue of. Again, make note of those. Of,
yeah, you know, and I'll do that on cases. You know, come watch the forum on June 13th when those solicits hit up. You know, I'll start. Normally, we have the, you know, lately all the solicits kind of bundled up in the previews spotlight thread. I'm going to make a separate thread for the DC relaunch.
And that's fair.
Solicits. And, well, you know, I'll do that. I'm going to put up. I'm getting these. These are the ones I'm trying out. This is why, you know.
And I think it's more than just the solicits. I think that's the whole big DC relaunch in general. I want to hear what people have to say on, again, how they're marketing it, how they're, you know, what they're excited about, what they're not, how they think it's going to play out.
Yeah. But we've got a thread going right now on it. There's already been quite a few people chiming in on it. Called USA Today Complete DCU Reboot in September. I might at some point edit off that USA Today part.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was where the initial article came, which is important to me because it's not like, you know, Joe Blow's website. You know, it was like a USA Today article that's quoting Jeff Johns and Dan DiDio and all these guys. So, you know, it's legit news.
Well, I mean, really, I mean, that marked the beginning of, for lack of a better term, DC 2.0. You know, this is the biggest potential change in their entire lineup, you know, ever, including what happened between the Golden Age, Silver Age, including Crisis on Infinite Earths, etc. Because they're going into this with a plan. Whether it's a good plan or not remain to be seen, but I think it's a fundamentally different thing than we've seen before, and you know, I hope it pans out, and I agree with what you said earlier. It's going to be interesting to see how Marvel and other publishers react to this.
Yeah, they've got a little over 8 years to they say in the article on USA Today that they have no current plans to go back to the original numbering, and I would say we've got a little over 8 year clock running on that one, because that's when Action number 1000 would come out.
I was wondering where you were getting the 8 years from. Yeah,
right. Because you know, that's about how long it'll take at 12 issues a year for Action to get up around that realm. So another 100 issues out.
Well, but that's one of the reasons I think there's some negative buzz about this already, is it's easy to chalk this up as a renumbering stunt. And I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think they're trying to retool and
no,
update
there
their
is and,
yeah.
And I think that they will lose a tremendous amount of credibility if they just a year from now are going back to the original numbering on stuff.
Yeah.
I think 8 years from now, you know, they can probably be forgiven popping Action back so they can have an issue 1000 come out, you know, but I don't want to see it happen. You know, if they're going to do it, you know, and keep it for a good long while.
Yeah. Like, you know, Adventure Comics, it started at a number one, jumped over to the 500 plus thing, is now jumping back to a new number one. I mean, and that's where the cynicism comes from, is they've done this sort of thing time and time again. If DC does not come out of the gate at the end of Flashpoint with Justice League number one and everything coming out in September, firing on all cylinders and making us truly believe that this is the permanent new DC universe, new numbering and all, you know, and not going for the cheap, you know, cover gimmicks, renumbering gimmicks, and all this kind of stuff, left, right, and center. I mean, that's what's going to, you know, be, I think, the make or break point.
Well, and, you know, the most important people to this being successful, in my opinion, are not Grant Morrison. It's not, you know, whatever artist, you know, is popular. It's going to be the editorial and production staff at DC.
Yeah,
keeping it consistent, cohesive, on track, and coming out on a decent schedule and managing it like a business, because that's what they're doing. They are running a business, you know, and just crack down and get this stuff out.
CrossGen went about 4 years, I think, without ever missing a ship date. Then when they did, they quickly went under, but for other reasons. I'd like to see DC exceed that record. I think they've got the staff capable of doing that, certainly editorially, production-wise, etc. And, I mean, to me, they're throwing a gauntlet down with this. I think we as a readership and a fan base kind of need to throw our own gauntlet down and say, yeah, okay, we're going to try some of this stuff out. We're with you on this. We're going to let you take the risk. But you're saying this is a new starting point for DC. Fine, let it be a new starting point. Yep. Get your stuff out on time, treat continuity with respect, treat the readers with respect, treat the sanctity of a single issue as a solo purchase with respect. Yep. And if they can do that, this will be successful for them in the long term.
Yeah, and I mean, I just cut way back on comics. You know, I've been cutting back, and this is a huge opportunity for these guys, because I had cut back a decent amount on my DC books, and they have a chance to regain market share with me here, because I'm giving all these books a chance, you know?
Didn't I tell you, though, if you would just stop getting new number ones, you'd cut down really fast?
That's true, you know? If I just stop getting new number ones, I just won't be getting any more DC books after August. I guess that would be one way of looking at it.
But, really, you know, unfortunate.
But, I'm going to give them the shot, you know? And it's like, maybe my DC is going to go up. Maybe it'll go down. Maybe it'll stay around. I'm kind of guessing it'll stay around 25 or 30. You know, it's like about half the stuff will probably really appeal to me, and you know that'll be fine. But they've got the opportunity. I'm leaving the door open for them. I hope they do well.
I hope they do well. I also hope they retire the DC Nation column and replace it with something new and something a bit more effective. Mm-hmm. I'm getting tired of these video game tie-in, you know, full-page ads almost for it and stuff like that. They need to rethink that, and they need to use that to connect their editorial staff with the readers. So, definitely, again, lots of opportunity here, lots of potential for this, both good and bad. Hopefully it'll pan out well. I'm looking forward to it, like I said, unless there's something that's just completely alien to my tastes. I'm going to be getting all of these, certainly first issues. Odds are I'll be getting most of the stuff after that. But flip side, I may decide this is a good chance to back off a little on the DC. Don't know. It depends really what those 52 titles are and how interesting they and the creative teams look.
Yep. That again, we got 2 weeks. It'll be really interesting. I'm going to be glued to my computer screen on June 13th waiting for that new solicits to hit the web. I'm going to be really curious to see that.
And just so people know, on June 10th, we're going to do our previews conference call for the August release stuff, which is in the new previews coming out on the 1st of June. So, you know, on the 15th and 17th is when we're going to release our previews episodes for that stuff, which, you know, will seem a little oddly enough, dated in terms of the DC stuff, since they'll already be talking about the September stuff. But we get to it as quick as
we
can.
We've got all the other publishers that have not overwritten their August solicits by some huge announcement yet.
So far, I was going to say. Maybe Marvel will announce tomorrow all their stuff is going to be renumbered to number twos. I don't know. Just crazy. So anything else on this, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that's it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what we've discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.